sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Robert Bank, the incoming president of American Jewish World Service. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, our Maven on Israel, Oshrat Borel, and our new Maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom, Chag Chanukah Sameach and Chag Urim Sameach. A happy holiday of Chanukah and a happy holiday of lights. A long time ago, in a land far, far away, a small group of brave Jews fought off a great empire and its evil ruler, and led a rebellion and won a victory against all odds. A band of rebels were outnumbered, technologically inferior, facing a ruthless foe who wanted to steal the very soul of their culture. No, I am not talking about the new Star Wars movie. I'm talking about the Maccabees' triumph for freedom of conscience and religious practice over the Seleucid Syrian Greek Empire in 165 BCE. Today's the seventh day of Hanukkah. We must remember that freedom of religion as a right in society was won in an uneven battle against brutal tyranny. We are able to practice our religion and hold our own beliefs because of the victory of a small band of Jews led by the Hasmonean family of Mattathias and Judah, who defeated the great army of Antiochus IV. Hanukkah is the ultimate holiday of religious freedom, celebrating the victory that affirmed monotheism's right to exist in the world. Without the events we Jews celebrate at Hanukkah, Judaism would have ended more than 2,100 years ago. Christianity would never have happened at all. Jesus came from Israel in the Galilee out of a completely Jewish society, and Islam, the second great daughter religion of Judaism, would never have developed either. Which should remind us that freedom of religion is not automatically guaranteed in any society, even one as open as America's. It has been less than 6 months since a racist shot up an African-American church in Charleston, South Carolina. This week, we heard a famous politician loudly proclaim that we should ban all Muslims from entering the United States and register the rest for surveillance. In recent weeks, a majority of American governors have called on the federal government to stop allowing Syrian refugees to settle in their states, even though no Syrian refugees have been involved in any terror attacks. That issue divided on party lines, Republican governors declaring Syrian refugees unwelcome, while Democratic governors affirmed America's historic role as a haven for the oppressed. In the wake of the Paris attacks, the San Bernardino, California attack, and other attacks in places like Beirut, there is much anti-Muslim rhetoric everywhere now, most of which fails to distinguish between radicalized Islamists and the enormous plurality of peaceful Muslims in the world. In this time of heat, we should instead encourage light. There are important distinctions to be made. If we choose to demonize all Muslims and Islam itself, we are making a profound error. It's important to realize that the vast majority of Muslims are not jihadis. Most don't follow Sharia law. By irresponsibly categorizing all followers of Muhammad as proponents of holy war and terrorists, we do exactly what we should not do strategically. We drive moderates towards the extremist position, or at least supporting it, and we impair our ability to screen properly, and when necessary, to root out the radicals from our midst. Hanukkah affirms religious liberty as a human right. It also has a great deal to do with securing that liberty against any who would destroy it, including religious terrorists and extremists. It is our responsibility both to fight any who would deny the right of others to believe and practice as they wish, and to guarantee that no one, through violence or other means, is permitted to destroy the rights of free people to worship freely. Both are central to the message of Judaism, to Hanukkah, and to America. During this holiday of dedication and renewal, may we renew our own dedication to guaranteeing freedom of religion and the security to celebrate it, now and always. On a happier note, there is now a seriously viral trend in Hanukkah music, terrific parodies of pop songs that are often better than the original tunes. I have definitely become a big fan of this, and so to play us in this morning, here's the a cappella group 613's parody of Taylor Swift's Shake It Off, called appropriately Hanukkah.
I'm feeling pretty great. Got Hanukkah on my plate. I love this holiday. I love this holiday, and Kislev is the day, like candles 1 through 8, and a new one every day. I love this holiday.
I'm spinning dreidels, onions and potatoes, coming to my table, smells so good, singing it's gonna be 8 nights, cause we're counting up to 8, 8, 8.
That was 613's parody of Shake It Off, called Hanukkah. It's worth watching their video of that on YouTube, by the way. I hope you've been celebrating each night of Hanukkah, but please join us this very afternoon at Temple Emmanuel for our greatest Hanukkah on Earth show, Making Miracles, largest and best Hanukkah celebration in all of Arizona. It's today, Sunday, December 13th at 4:30 p.m., 225 North Country Club Road at Temple Emmanuel. It's free and open to all. In recent years, American Jewish World Service has become an increasingly important organization addressing third world issues in a forthright and hands-on way. Ruth Messenger, a past guest of Too Jewish, was a driving force in making AJWS central for many Jews and others seeking to address the most important problems in the world. Our guest this morning has the large task of following Ruth. Meet the impressive incoming president of American Jewish World Service, Robert Bank, when we return in a few moments here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
Hi, I'm Ben, a student at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can provide Jewish education to families at no cost to you. Direct your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization, and help make great Jewish education affordable. Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. JETCO gives scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction. When you give to JETCO, you get a 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income tax is reduced by the exact amount you've given. You can give up to $1,067 for a single filer and $2,134 for a married couple. You get that whole amount back from your state income tax. Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442, or go to JETCO.org. You can even choose a future date to process your payment. How cool is that? Make a tax credit contribution to JETCO and build Jewish identity in Tucson for generations of students. And it won't cost you a dime.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Robert Bank is currently the Executive Vice President of American Jewish World Service, but he will be the next president of AJWS starting July 1st of 2016. As the Executive Vice President for the past, 6.5 or 7 years, he's focused on growing the organization strategically, deepening its impact. He's had a wide commitment to social justice, and the American Jewish World Service furthers that aim in so many important ways. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Cohen. What a delight and pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and mazel tov, I should say, on being named the next president, succeeding really a legend, Ruth Messenger.
Ruth is indeed a legend. She is truly a hero of mine, and I am so delighted to take up this helm of this organization, and delighted also actually that our work together continues. Because I have one of the great privileges of naming her as our first global ambassador. But I'm very excited about what lies ahead. This is our 30th year of existence as an organization, and we are doing very powerful work all over the world, and it is a true privilege to be able to serve both the Jewish people and people all over the world in this role as President and CEO of American Jewish World Service.
I want to explore your background a little bit before we go deeper into AJWS. You grew up in the Jewish community in South Africa at the time of apartheid. I don't know that people, even our audience, knows so much about the Jewish involvement in working to end apartheid. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, thank you for asking that question, because in fact, it's a very rich history. There is considerable literature actually written about the Jewish involvement in working to end apartheid, to being involved in that movement, and in many ways similar to the movement of Jews supporting the end of racism in America. And so, you know, there has been, there were very instrumental mentors to me in my earlier years. For instance, Helen Suzman, who was the leader of what was then called the Progressive Party, who was, when I was very, very young, I remember hearing her speak in the Cape Town Zionist Hall, actually, about the issue of what was then one man, one vote. We would nowadays say one person, one vote, of course. But it was very powerful for me as a young person to be taken to a political meeting in which I was being taught, really, by my parents about marginalization of people and about treating people differently. And there have been many, many leaders in South African history who have stood up for the rights of those who were oppressed in that society and continue to do so. So this has really informed my life's work and inspires me in the work that I now do at American Jewish World Service.
And we will continue to explore that work of American Jewish World Service with Robert Bank, who will be the incoming president and CEO, when we come back in just a few moments here on Two Jewish. We welcome Pam and David of Freedom Smoke. So your product, a smokeless way to get off of tobacco. People don't really understand exactly what's wrong with cigarettes, or they think it's the same thing that's wrong with your product. Can you explain the difference?
That's true, Rabbi Cohen. Part of it is the cigarettes themselves, the FDA made them release the ingredients. There's over 3,000 ingredients in cigarettes. There's four ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, flavorings from Flavor Art in Italy, who is who we use, and nicotine itself. Our nicotine is USP hospital grade. It's the finest that you can purchase. Nicotine in and of itself is not harmful to the human body. That's why we have so many doctors referring patients that they just cannot get to quit smoking cigarettes. They send them to us for a much healthier alternative.
And where do people go and how do they find your stuff?
They can go to one of our three stores here in Tucson. We've got one at Orange Grove and River, one at Broadway and Swan, and one at 12th and Valencia. Or they can go online to freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thanks very much, and we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or ekvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com, twojewishradio18@gmail, or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, twojewishradio.com, or download us at the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. We have 11 months until we elect a new president of these United States and continue our special election year feature, the 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report. In-depth coverage, unusual stories, and the finest opinion on the air as we choose the new leader for our nation. This was quite a week for Donald Trump, the supposed Republican frontrunner for dictator, president. It's not easy to severely insult both all Muslims and right-wing Jews in the same week, but the Donald managed it beautifully by saying he was taking a stand and opposing allowing any Muslims to enter the U.S. Trump offended nearly everyone of intelligence, but especially the approximately 750 million Muslims on the planet. Of course, most of them will not be voting in the Republican primaries, but still, it was a massively stupid and extraordinarily un-American position to take. And it clearly overshadowed Trump's appearance at the Republican-Jewish coalition meeting earlier in the week. He managed to offend the entire gathering in an interview just the night before and then doubled up when he spoke to them. First, he said, "I don't know if Israel has the commitment to peace," which certainly is not the Republican-Jewish coalition's party line. And then when Trump spoke to the influential and monochromatic group, he said, "You're not going to support me even though you know I'm the best thing that could happen to Israel," Trump said. "I know why you're not going to support me, because I don't want your money. You want to control your own politician." Yeesh. You know, I used to think that Trump just added lots of color to the presidential race, and he was proving that even true fascists could be entertaining. Now he just seems creepy, and it amazes me that sane people might actually vote for him. But, of course, front-runner in the opinion polls or not, no one has, as of yet, cast any votes for anyone. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our Mivinah in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Chag Orim Sameach. Happy
Chanukah Sameach.
Thank you. You tell me you have a quiz here.
Yes.
Okay.
I hope you had enough latke and sufganiyot and you're ready for my quiz.
Lots of energy.
Good. So I have 5 questions about Jerusalem. There is a lot of things that you and the audience knows about Jerusalem, but did you know, how much the biggest stone of the Kotel is weight? What's the weight of the...
Oh, boy. It's like 120 tons or something?
400.
400 tons. I was only off by a factor of 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you know that the biggest synagogue in the world is in Jerusalem?
Is it Heichal Shlomo?
Do you know how many...
people it seats?
Yeah.
4,000.
Yeah, 5,000.
Oh, that's close.
Yeah, close.
I've been there many times.
What is the city that mentioned... like the most in all our, you know, Kitve Kodesh?
Yerushalayim, it has to be.
Do you know how many times?
No.
659.
659. Somebody counted this.
Do you know what, how came the name of Jerusalem, Yerushalayim?
Yerushalom, city of peace, but it was not an Israelite city. It was a Jebusite city.
You know what? I hope it won't be any political...
Malkit Tzedek? I don't know. I'm taking a wild shot.
Malkit Tzedek. But it's a compromise between...
Fear, or the
Bishvil Avraham, Veshalem Bishvil Malki Tzedek, and God wanted to, you know, compromise between these two tzaddikim, so it called Yerushalem. And actually it mentioned more in the Bible as Yerushalem than Yerushalayim.
Another interesting fact that I did not know.
And since my pina is contemporary Israel, so did you know that the first jazz festival, international jazz festival, was last week, mm-hmm, in Jerusalem?
No, the first international jazz festival in Jerusalem. So
Those are great facts about Jerusalem. I know a couple of my own. But
do you have a question for me,
Rabbi? Well,
I'll
have a question for you. Or maybe not so much a question. The Jerusalem Festival is actually one of the great arts festivals in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a combination of every kind of art, music, theater, poetry readings, lots of different kinds of music, especially many different kinds of performances. But how many Jerusalem festivals have there been?
A lot.
Thank you. Perfect answer. Thanks so much, Oshran. Chag Chanukah Sameach.
Toda, Rabbi. Chag Sameach.
We'll talk next week.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Jarrow Psych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been hearing a great deal about refugees. We've been talking a lot about refugees, the Syrian and other refugee situation in Europe, which continues. It's not on the front pages here because in America we're talking about who doesn't want Syrian refugees. What progress has there been on the refugee front in Europe?
Well, one of the most interesting recent developments, I think, is, and probably many of your listeners have seen news reports about this, that the European Union, which is notoriously stingy, offered Turkey basically a bribe of $3 billion to stem the flow of refugees through its territory to Europe. Now, there are a lot of things that are interesting about that. First of all, it's not clear to me, I'm not sure it's clear to anyone, what percentage of the refugees who arrive in Europe actually cross Turkey. I mean, there are a lot of ways to get to the Mediterranean without going through Turkey. Syria has a coastline. Lebanon has a coastline. Israel has a coastline. Egypt has a coastline. All of North Africa has a coastline. And you can go through countries that have very loosely controlled borders like Armenia and Georgia and get to the Black Sea, and from the Black Sea through the Bosphorus to the Mediterranean, or go across land of Ukraine and or Moldova into Romania, whatever. In other words, Turkey is a big, important player in this region. But even if Turkey succeeds 100% in stopping the flow of refugees, it doesn't solve the problem. And I think the problem, in some senses, needs redefining because...
You know, I think about the analogy of water when we talk about it with the American-Mexico, U.S.-Mexico border. You close one area, it just flows to a different place. There's lots of other ways into Europe.
Right. Even entering into this discussion implies some kind of acceptance of the notion that refugees are a problem. And, I mean, I think that's a notion that deserves closer examination, because pretty much everybody in the United States is descended from a refugee of one sort or another, except maybe for African Americans who arrived here involuntarily because they were sold into slavery, and their descendants perhaps are not really refugees. But the rest of us were either religious or economic or political refugees, and to some extent, according to historical records, that's even true for the so-called Native Americans who ultimately came here from Northeast Asia as a result of climate changes. And they were like climatic refugees. But, you know, people flee their homelands for a variety of reasons, looking for better weather, better education, better healthcare, better whatever, and end up often half a world away as refugees. Look at Australia. I mean, okay, yeah, the original population was convicts who were sent there to serve out a jail sentence, but then a lot of people chose to move there as refugees over the ensuing centuries. And Australia, like the United States, is largely a country of refugees. And I'm not sure Australians would agree with a notion that seems to be getting wider and wider acceptance in Europe, that refugees are a threat or a danger or somehow a bad thing.
Oh, I think they would. They've had their own issues with refugees there. And in fact, some of them Lebanese and Syrian in Sydney, for example. I don't know that Australia is any better at understanding the refugee issue than we are. But it is a really interesting question, and we'll explore it more fully. You know, what makes somebody a refugee, and what is a Jewish perspective on this, which I think is not necessarily what we're hearing right now. Thanks, Tom.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, the head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Or.
And Chag Sameach. Happy Hanukkah.
Thank you. To you, too.
So Hanukkah was not even the first, but one of many times in which Judaism came in contrast with another civilization's ideas that challenged Judaism. And then we had to kind of decide what we were going to include and what we were going to leave behind. That was Greek philosophy, and now there's Jewish philosophy, right? And
right.
We teach it, even though we fought a war kind of to prevent it from winning.
Yep.
What is the contrast now between our contemporary society and all the great Jewish values that we espouse?
It's an important question. And I think one of the great challenges as well as opportunities for the Jewish people has been this engagement in the diaspora amongst other cultures and how we maintain who we are, but at the same time interact with and learn from other cultures around us. So, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is, now that we're all, you know, knee deep in the 21st century, there's all this new technology. There's a whole generation of new innovations that have taken over so much of our lives as adults and the lives of young people. And one thing I find exciting is that it seems in every generation and every kind of evolution of capitalism or consumerism or technology, there's always a Jewish stamp on it. There's a way to be involved as a Jew. So, for example, you know, you whip out your smartphone, you don't really have to look too far to find an app for a Hebrew calendar or.
Been using it since I had a Palm Pilot, you know.
There you go.
There's lots of great.
I think that dates you, Rabbi.
A little bit, yeah. It's on my iPhone now, though. It's
up there. You go. And, you know, Shabbat candle lighting times and essential prayers to say as a Jew. And even watching what's happening at the wall, it's phenomenal.
So, you know, you can just text your message to the Kotel.
That's
to
right.
Be sent to God directly.
That's
you know?
Right. So where there's a market and there's a will, there's going to be a Jewish way to find a nice application to foster who
so,
we are.
So, and I know there's like Hanukkah candle lighting apps that keep adding another simulated candle, you know, an ersatz
right.
candle on your iPhone. Phone or on your Samsung. What's the contrast, you know, in addition to all these great skills that people have now and
yeah.
you know, you don't need to bring a prayer book with you, you've got your iPhone.
Right.
What are the Jewish values that this era really highlights?
Well, I think there are so many things about Judaism, Jewish religion, faith, culture, that are true today as they were a millennia ago. And as excited as we are about our smartphones, you know, we can never forget.
And I'd even say the smart boards you have at Tucson Hebrew Academy are fantastic.
That's right. We've got all kinds of great technology in play at THA. And the smart board is a great example of a learning device that's used for Jewish education. But the traditional mainstays that have helped us to be an intelligent people, a successful people in the Western world, are as important today as they ever were. And we're talking about critical and creative thinking. We're talking about problem solving and working collaboratively. We're talking about questioning authority and digging deep into understanding who we are and why we do things. Reading a passage from the Torah or another Jewish text is as important today as it ever has been, and maybe even more so, because it brings us back to the fundamental of where we came from and who we are. And the struggle of finding meaning for that today and applying it to our lives today is a very rewarding opportunity that bridges that gap of this millennia-old heritage into the modern day.
Into the millennial generation.
That's right.
Thanks, John. Chag Sameach. Happy end of Hanukkah. We'll talk next week.
Chag Sameach.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high school, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org. The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, is going May 29th to June 9th, 2016. If you're interested in coming on this fantastic journey to Israel, seeing it all from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to the Sea of Galilee to amazing Jerusalem, please email tojewishradio18, tojewishradio18@gmail.com, or call 520-327-4501 for more information. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humorist Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. As the El Al plane settled down at Ben-Gurion in Israel, the voice of the captain came on. Please remain seated with your seatbelt fastened until the plane is at a complete standstill and the seatbelt signs have been turned off. To those of you standing in the aisles, struggling to pull Hanukkah presents you bought overseas out of the overhead compartments, we wish you a happy Hanukkah. To those of you who have remained politely in your seats with your seatbelts fastened, we wish you a Merry Christmas. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish Just For You. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion of Vayigash begins with the climax of the great Joseph story that fills the last sections of the book of Genesis. Joseph is now the powerful ruler of Egypt, richest country in the ancient world. His miraculous ascent from slavery and prison to the heights of political power is the stuff that dreams are made of. He is the master of all he surveys, subservient only to a pharaoh who trusts him completely. He is handsome, rich, hugely powerful, with a wife and two sons, completely assimilated into Egypt's elegant culture and still comparatively young. The world sits at his manicured feet. But wait, there's more. For into this idyllic scene blunder Joseph's early tormentors, the very half-brothers who taunted him and beat him up. These are the conniving thugs who stripped him, tossed him into a pit in the earth, and sat down to eat lunch, debating in his hearing whether to kill him or just abandon him to thirst and starvation, and then sold him into slavery in a foreign land instead. Now, 20 years later, he has the opportunity to return the favor to exact vengeance on these half-brothers. After a sequence of twists and turns, Joseph has manipulated them into a state of confusion and terror, unmanned these arrogant, unruly rural ruffians into fearful submission. He has had his dish of revenge served cold, and seems to have enjoyed it. And then something changes in Joseph. Perhaps he simply tires of psychologically torturing his half-brothers. Perhaps it is that he's finally seen his full brother Benjamin again, the only living reminder of his dead mother, Rachel. Perhaps it's that the fullest measure of revenge is magnanimity. Perhaps it's simply that Joseph's pragmatism exerts itself. He must end the cat-and-mouse game one way or another. Or maybe it's the stirring confessional speech his powerful half-brother Judah delivers that brings Joseph to a new place. At the beginning of Vayigash, in the dramatic high point of the whole story, Joseph chooses to reunite with his family. He sends out his advisors, counselors, and courtiers. He cries out in a voice loud enough to be heard by all and admits to his brothers, "I am Joseph." Weeping, he embraces his brother Benjamin, asking, "Is my father still alive?" One can imagine the shock of that moment, even now, 3,600 years after the events. The brothers may have had an inkling that he was indeed Joseph. It's implied in the text of the story. But the full revelation must have been stunning nonetheless. Their worst fears are realized. They have been and are now completely in the power of a despised half-brother they comprehensively wronged. What now? Joseph moves immediately to reassure them and relieve their fears, while he gently reminds them that he is the authority now. Everyone will move down to Egypt and live in land he provides for them, including his father Jacob. The family will be reassembled, but in a very different configuration. For the unquestioned new patriarch is Joseph, and the great story will continue in a new land and a new direction. There is something about this tale that compels us to examine our assumptions about how things work. Unpredictable events occur in this world. What we expect is often not what occurs. Fate plays a role. And in the best of circumstances and with God's help, our own actions, like Joseph's, may begin from a base motivation, yet ultimately rise to a level of magnanimity and grace. When we return here on To Jewish, our guest, Robert Bank, will explore his own vision for American Jewish World Service, the organization that addresses third world problems from a Jewish perspective. He is the incoming president. He'll be back with us in a moment here on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
The greatest library of rare Jewish books in the world held outside of the Vatican will begin to be broken up next week. December 22nd, 12 selected pieces from the Val Madonna Trust Library, an unrivaled library of some 300 handwritten Hebrew documents and 13,000 rare printed Hebrew books, some dating back as far as 1,000 years, will go on sale in New York. The collection was assembled by Jack Lunzer, an industrial diamond merchant from Britain who previously sought to sell it, but with stipulations that the library only be sold as a whole and kept available for scholars. Lunzer also stipulated that the buyer must himself agree not to break up the collection through subsequent sale. But Lunzer is now 91 years old and suffers from dementia. Over the last 15 years, the library's trustees were unable to obtain the price they sought while maintaining Lunzer's stipulations. They are now moving to sell off some of the rarest and highest-priced books individually in order to support the whole collection. Scholars had taken reassurance from Lunzer's original conditions, which guaranteed them and those who rely on their research continued access. It's been available to scholars since it's been at Sotheby's. It would be a terrible loss to the Hebrew book lore to have the rest of the printed book collection dispersed, said Brad Hill, the curator at the Kiev Judaica Collection at George Washington University. The library's trustees defend their decision to sell individual books and manuscripts and override Lunzer's stipulations as an effort to make the rest of the library more affordable to sell as a whole. Though there has been great interest over the years, the collection proved too expensive and expansive for both private buyers and institutions. Margaret Rotham, Lunzer's oldest daughter, said that he has been informed of the trustees' decision. David Redden, the chairman of Sotheby's Book and Manuscripts Department, said all the money made from the auction will go to the trust. Lunzer amassed the rare artifacts over a span of 50 years. He traveled to the far corners of Italy, Spain, Turkey, Portugal, and cities like Amsterdam, where ancient printing presses produced works on vellum and silk paper from the 1400s through the 1700s. "I love these books with my heart and soul," said his daughter Rotham, who explained that she often accompanied her father to towns so remote she still doesn't know the names of some. This lifelong hobby filled a void for Lunzer after his wife died at the age of 52 in 1978. Lunzer often sat alone in his library, poring over research books to decipher the details about the manuscripts he had his eye on. He was thrilled, his daughter said, to travel and study. It was his life's work. The library is considered a collection of vast yet meticulous beauty and scholarly intellect. Many manuscripts are dressed in gold leaf, painted with picturesque 18th century scenes, or adorned with intricate borders and illustrations. Having failed to sell the collection as a whole to any one buyer, the valuation was placed at $35 million. The Library of Congress tried to buy the whole thing for $20 million in 2002, but was rebuffed. Sotheby's is now commissioned to sell off the most valuable books. The December 22nd sale includes two of its most prized items, a copy of the Bamberg Talmud and a handwritten Pentateuch from 1189. The Talmud, originally printed by Daniel Bamberg, a Venice-based Christian printer, from 1519 to 1539, is considered to be one of the most important documents in the whole history of Hebrew printing. "It changed and revolutionized the ways Jews studied the Talmud," said Sharon Mintz, the senior Judaica consultant at Sotheby's. The copy in the Val Madonna collection, estimated at $5.7 million, is one of 14 sets in the whole world. For centuries, it was at Westminster Abbey in London. With that same dedication Lunzer gave to his other acquisitions, he chased the Talmud after becoming aware of its existence in 1956. He secured it 25 years later when he acquired a 900-year-old copy of Westminster's Charter and exchanged it for the Talmud. The Pentateuch, the Torah in a book form with commentary, estimated to sell at $2 to $4 million, is the only Hebrew text to survive after King Edward I ordered the expulsion of Jews from the British Isles in 1290. It's truly sad to see this amazing library broken up. In much lighter news, Congregation Ahavat Shalom, a conservative synagogue in Fort Worth, recently combined almost 50,000 Legos to create a functioning Chanukiah that's more than 16 feet tall. Rabbi Andrew Bloom, who came up with the idea, said the menorah sets an unofficial world record. We called Guinness and they wanted $11,000 to come out and measure it, so we decided we'd be in the Google Book of World Records, Bloom said. We researched and figured out that 16 feet 4 inches would be the tallest Lego menorah ever built. This is further proof that no idea is too silly if it helps fulfill the Hanukkah commandment to do Pirsomet HaNes, publicizing the miracle of this festival. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest, Robert Bank. He is the current Executive Vice President of American Jewish World Service and the next president of and CEO of American Jewish World Service. That role he will assume on July 1st, 2016, succeeding Ruth Messenger, who's helped build the organization into an important player in a variety of social justice projects and programs around the world. Robert, can you tell us a little bit about how AJWS works now and what your vision is for the future?
Absolutely. AJWS now works in 19 countries in the developing world where we support leaders, social movements, organizations that are working to advance human rights and to end poverty for some of the most oppressed people in the world today. We also work here in the United States, working with, advocating to the United States government and the administration to advance human rights in its foreign policy. So we connect the developing world problems to those of policymakers in the United States in order to make the most effective change. We engage the American Jewish community deeply in our work, both through our advocacy work and through encouraging them to draw on the lessons of Jewish history around our own oppression and marginalization and the values of Tikkun Olam, and particularly the value of tzedakah, the notion that the righteous thing to do is to support those that are less fortunate than us. We have made great strides as American Jews, and many of us, as like myself, originally as diaspora Jews, and we are consistently working to carry out truly the biblical legacy and tradition of welcoming the stranger, because we were the stranger ourselves for so many millennia. As far as my vision for the future is concerned, I'm extremely interested in making us continuing to elevate our work and ensure that American Jews understand deeply what it is we do and why we're doing it. We are the leading American Jewish organization that is working to advance human rights for those most oppressed in the developing world. And we are continuing to refine our strategies about how to make the most impact in that work. So, for instance, we currently work in three different regions in the world, in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Caribbean. And in those countries, we are working with truly visionary leaders who are not only changing their local communities, but are changing the lives of millions of people, both in their countries and around the world. Recently, we celebrated our 30th anniversary, and we honored an activist named Julienne Lusenge, and she's from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and she is a remarkable leader who is not only bringing those who commit rape in the Congo to justice, but she's also building a community of women leadership in that country, and many of these women are now participating in the in local and national venues to make change in her country. We hope to really grow our commitment and our support of these change makers in the world, because we are living in a broken world that needs a lot of similar vision as Julien.
So as the first and only Jewish organization dedicated to what many people would call social justice concerns, but ending poverty, working for human rights in the developing world specifically, how do you integrate your Jewish ideals in the work that you do on the ground without feeling like you're preaching? Is it just to motivate the volunteers? Do you integrate some of those ideas into the work that you do hands-on?
That's a fantastic question. We do both, I would say. I would say that we integrate our Jewish work into absolutely every single thing that we do. And one of the beautiful, beautiful parts of American Jewish World Service is that we are an American Jewish World Service, and in our name, we give Jews the enormous possibilities of providing service to the world. And so, what happens when we are visiting our grantees in country on the ground, to your question, is this remarkable brotherhood and sisterhood that happens between our partners, as we call them, who we are accompanying on this journey, and the American Jews who are visiting them. And this is true when our grantee partners come to the United States as well. There are some beautiful stories of long-term relationships between people who would never have met before, people who would never have thought that their lives were in fact very similar, notwithstanding sometimes completely different conditions, and a true understanding of sort of global fellowship that develops. And this is actually one of the things that inspires me most about my job and is so key to my vision, because I truly believe that we as Jews not only have a responsibility, but are very well suited to being open and courageous about supporting those who have less than us. And so we have had grantees who have learned the terms Tikkun Olam, Betzelem Elohim, Tzedakah, and they truly understand that these are actually global values, that many of them who might not be Jewish but might come from other faith traditions share. And one of the most beautiful things that I've experienced in my travels all over the world is that so many of our grantees also are inspired in their social justice work by their particular faiths. So, we are very, very honored, really, to partner with these individuals and communities who sometimes, I know for myself, I would never have had the opportunity to sit down, break bread with, and explain to each other our commonly held values.
So I have a final question for you. You're a Juilliard-trained pianist. You taught piano in underserved areas. You've played in some extraordinary places. Do you still get to play piano as part of your work?
Thank you so much. I'm so gratified that you asked me that question. I don't get to play as part of my work, but I certainly get to play the piano. It's a joy that I experience. It's a very comforting and really wonderful opportunity for me to share music both with myself and with others, and sometimes play with others. And it's something that inspires me every day.
Now, I realize that whether it's fighting for better compensation for Cambodian garment workers, or better water supplies or rights of women or gays and lesbians in Africa, but a concert in each of those places might, help somehow.
I'll take that under advisement. certainly, let me just tell you, though, Rabbi, that one of the most beautiful things that does happen when we visit these countries and we visit the communities that we serve is we are oftentimes welcomed with music. And, music soothes the wildest of beasts, as they say. There are many comments about what music can do and how it can bridge people's differences. But I was recently actually in Burma, or Myanmar, as some people call it,
right.
And we were welcomed to a grantee group with some of the most amazing musical instruments that I had ever seen in my life. And then we all had a try on these musical instruments. And there was singing and there was dancing, something else that I think is a very Jewish thing, and really enabled us to get to know each other better. So I love the fact that you're sort of bringing some of the more creative sides of both people in general and the Jewish people into this interview. So thank you.
It's a great pleasure. I want to thank Robert Bank for a wonderful visit here on Too Jewish. You can find out more about American Jewish World Service, ajws.org. There's lots of ways of participating and contributing. Thank you so much. And again, Mazel Tov on your new position in just 6 months.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kohan, and happy Hanukkah to you.
Thank you. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9. Our guest will be Rabbi David Zaslow, author of Jesus, First Century Rabbi, just in time for the second best December holiday. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from the group Stand For, made up of alumni from Yeshiva University's a cappella group, the Maccabees. It's their Hanukkah parody song called Eight Nights, based on the group fun's song Some Nights. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a Chag Urim Sameach, a happy final night of Hanukkah tonight, a good week, and join us at our greatest Hanukkah celebration this afternoon, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Eight nights I stay up, staring at those candles, they tell the story that occurred. Eight nights we're thankful for that small miracle.